I pulled onto a parking pad sufficient to accommodate 10 cars and left my pale blue VW hunched, cartoon-like, between a sleek Lincoln Continental on one side and a full-size Mercedes on the other. I didn't bother to lock up, operating on the assumption that the electronic surveillance system was watching over both me and my vehicle as I crossed to the front walk. The lawns were wide and well-tended, and the quiet was underlined by the twittering of finches. I pressed the front bell, listening to the hollow-sounding chimes inside clanging out two notes as though by a hammer on iron. The ancient woman who came to the door wore an old-fashioned black uniform with a white pinafore over it. Her opaque stockings were the color of doll flesh, her crepe-soled shoes emitting the faintest squeak as I followed her down the marble-tiled hall. She hadn't asked my name, but perhaps I was the only visitor expected that day. She showed me into the library, which was paneled in oak. Drab, leather-bound books lined shelves that ran floor to ceiling, with a brass rail and a rolling ladder allowing access to the upper reaches. Mr. Lafferty was seated in one of a pair of matching wing chairs. I placed him in his 80s, an age I'd considered elderly once upon a time. I've since come to realize how widely the aging process varies. My landlord is 87, the baby of his family, with siblings whose ages range as high as 96. All five of them are lively, intelligent, adventurous, competitive, and given to good-natured squabbling among themselves. Mr. Lafferty, on the other hand, looked as though he'd been old for a good 20 years. He was inordinately thin, with knees as bony as a pair of misplaced elbows. His once sharp features had at least been softened by the passing years. Two small, clear plastic tubes had been placed discreetly in his nostrils, tethering him to a stout green oxygen tank on a cart to his left. He studied me with eyes as dark and shiny as dots of brown sealing wax.
"I appreciate your coming, Ms. Milhone. I'm Nord Lafferty," he said,
holding out a hand that was knotted with veins. His voice was hoarse, barely a whisper. "Nice to meet you," I murmured, moving forward to shake hands with him. His were pale, a tremor visible in his fingers, which were icy to the touch. He motioned to me.
"You might want to pull that chair close. I've had thyroid surgery a month ago, and more recently some polyps removed from my vocal cords. I've been left with this rasping noise that passes as speech. Isn't painful, but it's irksome. I apologize if I'm difficult to understand."
"So far, I'm not having any problem."
"Good. Would you like a cup of tea? I can have my housekeeper make a pot."
"Thanks, but I'm fine." I pulled the second wing chair closer and took a seat.
"I'm assuming you're a busy woman, so I'll get right to the point. Your name was given to me by a friend of yours, fellow I met during this recent hospital stay."
"Stacy Oliphant," I said, the name flashing immediately to mind. I had worked a case with Stacy, a retired Sheriff's Department homicide detective, and my old pal, Lieutenant Dolan, now retired from the Santa Teresa Police Department. Stacy was battling cancer, but the last I'd heard, he'd been given a reprieve. Mr. Lafferty nodded.
"He asked me to tell you he's doing well, by the way. He checked in for a battery of tests, but all of them turned out negative. As it happened, the two of us walked the halls together in the afternoons, and I got chatting about my daughter, Reba."
I was already thinking skip trace, missing heir, possibly a background check on a guy if Reba were romantically involved. Nord went on.
"I only have the one child, and I suppose I've spoiled her unmercifully, though that wasn't my intent. Her mother ran off when she was just a little thing this high. I was caught up in business and left the day-to-day raising of her to a series of nannies. She'd been a boy. I could have sent her off to boarding school the way my parents did me, but I wanted her at home. In retrospect, I see that might have been poor judgment on my part, but it didn't seem so at the time."
He paused and then gestured impatiently toward the floor as though chiding a dog for leaping up on him.
"Oh, no matter. It's too late for regrets. Pointless, anyway. You probably wonder what I'm driving at.
I proffered a slight shrug, waiting to hear what he had to say.
Reba's being paroled on July 20th. That's next Monday morning. I need someone to pick her up and bring her home. She'll be staying with me until she's on her feet again.
What facility? I asked, hoping I didn't sound as startled as I felt.
California Institution for Women. Are you familiar with the place?
It's down in Corona, a couple hundred miles south. I've never actually been there, but I know where it is.
Good. I'm hoping you can take time out of your schedule for the trip.